This is an interview recorded with Mel Recchi for the Italian Market Gardener's Oral History Project. I'm Madeline Regan and I'm interviewing Mel on the 31st of July 2014 in his home at Flinders Park, South Australia. Thanks very much, Mel, for the second interview.
You're welcome, Madeline.
And we're going to just start with a little overview of your family moving to this area. What year did you move here?
Yeah, Mum and Dad, we moved here in 1946. We moved from Paradise to Lockleys, which was called in those days, which is now Flinders Park. And that was in 1946, in the February of 1946. And in those days it was called River Road, Lockleys, and not Findon Road, Flinders Park.
And how old were you and your sister?
My sister and I were both twins. We were just over seven years of age. We were born in 1938, so we would have been just on 7 years of age.
And can you remind me how many acres your parents had?
Well, I know that Dad had 9 acres of land, which was leased from Britton Jones. And they worked together. Dad, he worked together with his brother-in-law, Donato Diano and Dominic Diano. And they worked the land together for a short time, but Dominic Diano, he left after 12 months, and Donato, he left after about 3 years, and it was left to Dad.
Mm. And what was he growing?
Our main crop was celery, but in the early days we had 5 glass houses, and we used to grow legumes, beans, and beans and peas, but then we concentrated mainly on celery.
Right. And your memories of what the land looked like when you came here?
Well, the gardening land was all tilled, so that was fairly clean. But then there were a lot of paddocks from around the area, because if we wanted transport, we had to walk to Henley Beach Road. And the area up there was a lot of boxthorn bushes and thistle bushes and fennel bushes, quite a few fennel bushes everywhere. But things have changed. But in those days, you would be lucky to pass 2 cars when you were walking down to Henley Beach Road. But now you have hundreds of cars go past you if you have to walk that distance.
And around where your parents were on the eastern side of Findon Road, what would it have looked like in 1946?
Well, in 1946 we had a whole row of pine trees and gum trees along Findon Road itself. Then on our boundary on the eastern side of Dad's property, it was all bamboos. There was a whole row of bamboos right out the whole length of the property, going down to what is called Hartley Road, or there used to be a channel down there, a water channel.
Can you say a little bit more about the water channel?
Well, the water channel was on the end of Hartley Road, and it used to come down Hartley Road, turn at right angles, and then it turned at right angles to the right, then right angles to the left, and stopped at Findon Road. And it was just an open culvert, just an open channel.
And where was its source?
Well, it was only sourced from, I think, from Hartley Road, most of the rain. You know, most of the water that came down Hartley Road was sourced into that channel. Because there were very few houses in those days. Most of them were market gardens. And any rain that came down was virtually just seeped into the vacant land. There was very, very little runoff. So anywhere where there was a road, there used to be a certain amount of runoff, and a lot of that water did come down Hartley Road.
Mm. And was that concreted?
No, just open, dirt. Just dirt, and quite often it had quite a few fennel bushes in there.
And did any of the market gardeners use it for watering?
No. A lot of our watering, if you were lucky enough to be on the river frontage, we could get water off the river. Yeah, we have water. There were quite a few pumps on most gardens. Most of the gardeners had pumps situated on the River Torrens, and if the Torrens ran low, they would apply to the government, and the government would open up the weir and let the water flow down and to fill up the water holes where the pumps were.
And if people weren't on the river frontage, how did they water?
Most of them had bore water. Yeah, there were bores. You know, bores were quite easy to find around the area. There was, you'd probably get water. I think the water table was only down about 15 or 20 feet till you struck water, but you might put a pump down, might go down to 40, 50 feet, maybe 60 feet at the most.
And did your father have a bore?
We had a bore as well.
Was it there when you came?
It was there when we came. Yes, the bore was there when we came. And the pump was virtually approximately 20 feet underground. You had to virtually dig, so we dug down and, when they put it down, they would have dug down and shored it up with timber. And the pump was about 20 feet below ground level with a pipe going in another 25, 30 feet to get to the water. Mm. To get to the water basin.
And that was pretty common?
And that was very common. That was very, very common. Yes.
And when you arrived here, can you just remind me about where you lived? You know, what was your accommodation?
Well, when we left Paradise, I can recall that Dad had this house built in his first 10 years that he was here, and it was a solid brick home of three bedrooms, and then we moved from there. We came to Flinders Park, or where we are, where we're talking from now, and it was only a galvanised house, fairly rambly, but they still managed to live there and do everything they needed.
And how long was it that you lived in that house?
In that house, we lived there for a total of 6 years before Dad built a new home in the mid-50s, about 53, I think he built the new home.
And where was the new home located?
The new home was located about 200 metres north of the old home. So it was located on the property.
And yes. How far from Findon Road?
It was on Findon Road. It was almost, the house Dad built was almost opposite Valletta Road. As you're coming in from down Valletta Road towards Findon Road, it's a house on the right-hand side. And that was Dad's house that he built back in the early 50s.
And what strikes me about that house is the beautiful brickwork.
It is. It's made out of textured bricks, which are only 2-inch bricks, not the 4-inch bricks, or the whole frontage. And then another thing about it, that when they put the terrazzo down on the veranda, Dad decided to put a plane in it, so they put an emblem of a plane in the veranda with six motors on it.
Why did he do that?
Oh, just for something different to do.
And so who would have done the terrazzo?
The terrazzo was done by a chap, Fantasia, Biagi Fantasia. He was a concrete worker at the time, and he did the terrazzo.
And so the design of including the plane with the six engines?
Yeah, six engines. It's still in the terrazzo. It's still there today.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you for giving that sort of context, Mel. We've got a map in front of us. It's an aerial map that was provided by the City of Charles Sturt, and it's was taken in 1949, and we're going to use that to talk about the market gardens in that area, and we've identified where some of them lived. But I was thinking, if we started at the River Torrens and, you know, the Keel Bridge, where and we look north along Findon Road, I wonder if you could tell me first about the land that you see there. Who was the first person living on the northern side?
Well, the first person living on the northern side was Hop Singh. He was a Chinaman, and I still remember this day, at 92 years of age, he was still driving his truck to the market. And he had this little truck driving to the market, and his main produce was mainly spinach and parsley, and that's basically what he, and then he'd have a few spring onions or something, but he'd always drive off to market. And I believe his son is here now.
Still living in the area?
Still living in the area, yes.
And would Hop Singh have been born in Australia?
I don't think so. No, I'm sure he would have been born from China. And he would have come into China.
Right, and what? How big would his land have been?
Well, I'm sure his land would have only been about 5 or 6 acres at the most. But when they've done the River Torrens scheme with the walkways and that, they took quite a bit of his land away from him. And I think his son has been left with about 2 or 3 acres. I'm not exactly sure, but that's what it would have been. But he would have lost a lot of land on the River Torrens site when they did the River Torrens scheme.
And would people have mixed with Hopsing and the family, or were, you know, how were they considered in the community?
Oh, they were considered very friendly. But then again, Chinese food didn't suit the Italian food, and I don't think the Italian food suited the Chinese food. But no, they were always very friendly and always very, very polite. You know, and that was one Hopsing, but then there are other Chinese in the area as well.
Mm. And then if we move forward a bit, what can you tell me about the next
The next one, there was a house there, but now, I'm not sure who that belonged. Well, I think it still belonged to Britton Jones, but I know that was leased out to a family called Rossitanos that I can remember. But now they came from northern Italy, and they moved. There was a house there right alongside Hopsing's property, and that's where they moved in.
And were they market gardeners?
No. They just lived there, and I think the father worked at Holmes. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Just going back to Hopsing for a minute, did they own the land?
No, I think most of that land was all leased from Britton Jones, and that was at that time. And I think Britton Jones, they sold it. They mainly subdivided it all and had it sold roughly in the early 50s sometimes. I'm not exactly sure of the dates, but sometimes in the early 50s is when most of that land was sold and purchased by different people.
What did you know about the Britton Jones?
Not a great deal. Britton Jones were, you know, they were fairly private in their own work, but all I know is that the house was a fairly well established house, and it was well off the main road, and they used to do a lot of they had paddocks there suitable for horses, and I suppose in those days horses were quite common. And there was a driveway with massive gum trees that left Findon Road right up to the homestead.
And it's possible to see
that there. Yeah, there was a big road, and there was a roadway right in there. And they were massive gum trees. So then we had...
Mel, just little thing about the Britton Jones. I think you told me that you understood that they owned land basically from the river up to Grange Road.
I believe originally that Britton Jones owned land from the river right through to Findon Road, right through to Grange Road. But I'm not sure exactly how far they went east.
Right.
So, but personally, I would say that would probably be their line marking there.
Right. Mm. Yeah. So, sorry, I interrupted you. You were going to say about your family's land?
Yeah, well, we had 9 acres. Dad had 9 acres of land, and that was part section of 411. And it was opposite Valletta Road is where the house is now, and we had probably a couple hundred metres to the left and a couple hundred metres to the right.
And what else was on the land apart from, you know, when you first went there in 46, the house?
There was a house, and then there was an old shed, like a packing shed, but which was only like a lean-to, basically. We had 5 glass houses, that was all that was there. And other than that, it was all vacant land.
And when we look at this aerial photo, you can see a house.
Yes.
And that looks like the packing shed, maybe.
Well, I'm not sure. When was this aerial photo?
49.
Yeah, no, see, that would have been the old house. Well, that would probably be in the chicken house, the old house and the packing shed.
Right.
And then there were pine trees here, and then there's a few gum trees there.
Right.
Yeah.
And then who were your neighbours if you went east of your land?
Well, I can only remember the Montelionis. They were in a property next to us. And then...
And you were telling me about the Montelionis' house.
Well, the Montelionis' house, that was partly built on the edge of the... They had a big shed there, like a packing shed. and their house was virtually built on the side of the packing shed. It was only made out of galvanised iron, and that's where they used to live. It was only basically, I think, I'm not sure whether it was under the same roof as the packing shed or whether it was a separate roof. But I know it was part of the packing shed, which was that one.
And you told me that you used to walk past that house.
Yes, well, my Uncle Don, or Mum's brother, they had a property further to the east, and we used to cut across and walk in front, past Monteleone's to my uncle's place.
And did your uncle have, like, there's a very large strip of land?
Yeah, he had all that land there, and that was his house here.
Right.
And then this is your Ballastron's household there.
And so those two strips of land go from the river to what we call Hartley Road.
They go right from the river right through to Hartley Road. Most of the properties of those days were all virtually from Hartley Road straight back to the river. And they're all virtually owned by the one family. I know we had the Jarmans, we had the Gaskins, we had the Richardsons, and they all had properties going right down Hartley Road.
And would they all have had a combination of open land and glass houses?
They're all market. Most of them were all market gardeners, and some had glass houses. Some concentrated on potatoes. Some concentrated on celery, and a lot of them, you know, they just grew whatever they could.
And what about your uncle? What did he grow?
Yeah, no, he mainly had celery and potatoes, same as. Mainly that area became a very big celery growing area. And the celery growing area in those days was probably 5% might have been sold in Adelaide. The other 95% was all sold, sent interstate. Melbourne and Sydney were our biggest buyers for celery. And because they didn't grow celery in Melbourne, they didn't grow celery in Sydney, so we sent it from Adelaide to Sydney in Melbourne.
And why do you think that this area north of the river was such a, you know, good area for celery?
Oh, it was such a good area because going back many, many years ago, I haven't seen it, but the soil out of the on that side, is, as it came down the torrents, when the torrents flooded, flood zones, and it just built up with the soil and silt, and just became very productive soil, because originally the river torrents didn't go anywhere, it just went to a breakout creek which used to run down to Port Adelaide until they opened it up and took it out to West Beach. But before that, it was only just a very small, minute creek, and it used to flood quite often, I believe. I'm not exactly sure how many times it did flood, but most of this sand, this soil here is very rich.
And with the celery, what was the season of growing?
The season of growing, you used to plant your seed probably around about October and November, and you'd probably plant December. You'd be planting November, December, and your first crop would come off in about March, and go from March through to September.
A long season?
Yeah, it's usually about a nine-month season for celery. By the time you put your seedlings, plant your seed beds, to get your seedlings up, plant your seedlings and crop them, it's about 9 months.
And did your father produce his own seed?
Yes, we produced our own seed. Yes.
And why would that have been?
Oh, well, if you had a good stick of celery, you thought that was nice and strong, so you let it go to seed, and that's where you got your seed from. And that's what we got our seed from. But I think the varieties nowadays is certainly different to what it used to be. The celery nowadays had to be bleached, and I think they still bleach it nowadays. They board it up or cover it in so it bleaches. Then you get stringless, and in our day, I don't think the stringless was invented in our days, but you do get stringless celery now.
Mm.
And then you had the potatoes, and we used to grow potatoes as a sideline, which was sometimes quite lucrative. Mm.
And did you grow particular varieties of potatoes?
No. Well, back in those days, most of them, I think, were probably Sebagos or Kennebecs. You know, that's what we mainly used to grow.
And did you grow them from the eye?
From the eye, yes. You'd get there and get the seed and cut them into four or five pieces, get the eyes, and then planted one by one.
A lot of work.
There was a lot of work in everything. There was a lot of work, yes.
And so if we go back to the land, and we've covered a few of these blocks that we can see on the map, if you come to what we now know as Hartley Road, who's north of Hartley Road?
Well, north of Hartley Road, I can remember the Balestrins. He's the daughter of Balestrin. He was there before we came down here. And quite often there on a Sunday, all the Balestrins, because the Balestrins were quite a big family as far as brothers and nephews and aunt and so on. And they used to always get together on a Sunday morning and have a glass of wine and a chit-chat. And quite often there as children, we'd go over there. The men would be talking about the guns and the boys and the girls. They'd be running around having a bit of a play.
And where were the women?
Oh, the women, they'd be home cooking, getting ready for dinner. No, that was good. No, that was a Balestrins. And
what do you remember the Balestrins grew?
Balestrins mainly had tomatoes. They mainly had glasshouses. That's what their main interest was, mainly glasshouses. And but then there were Balestrins opposite us on Valletta Road, and he also moved to the northern side of Hartley Road in the later years. I think it was mid-50s, I think, they moved down there. And he also had a property just abutting the Flinders Park Football Club.
And we can see what looks like to be the oval there,
yes.
Already in 1949.
Mm. Yeah.
And on the northern side of that oval and that road there, we see quite a few houses, you know, adjacent to Findon Road.
Yes, they are.
Behind here, some open land, and then on the northern side of Drake Avenue.
Yeah, now on the northern side of Drake Avenue, I'm quite sure that was the Zarellas. I'm quite sure they had land there, but I'm not sure on the southern side who had that land. Whether that may have been Zarellas at the time, I'm not exactly sure. But then there's a... I know the houses were built there, but then a lot of housing trust homes were built there. That was back in the, just after the war, I think. There are quite a few housing trust homes.
Mm. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because you can see them just south of Grange Road there.
Road, yeah.
Quite a concentration.
There was quite a big concentration. So I think these were nearly all housing trust homes in there.
And the Catholic Church on
Captain Cook Avenue, out here.
And did your parents go to church there?
That's where Mum and Dad always used to go to church.
Did you walk there?
Yes.
So did you walk along?
Well, it's only 20 minute walk.
How would you have walked from your place?
Yeah, no, I usually go down here to Drake Avenue. Yeah, used to walk across Drake Avenue and get across there.
And so if you were walking there, what would you have seen?
Well, I can't remember too much about seeing too much, but you just see a few houses. But it was amazing in those days, it doesn't matter where you walked, you always seemed to know somebody. And, you know, you knew in the 1946, when we moved down here, you could have just about named every person that lived on Findon Road. You know, and... But in those days you could, because everybody knew everybody. It's the same as it was almost like living in a country town where you know everybody.
And would your father have experienced sharing equipment and things like that with other market gardeners in the area?
Yes, quite often. If you wanted a special equipment that you didn't have, you'd go and see another gardener that had that equipment and... they'd willingly let you have a loan of it. But most of the gardeners had their own equipment. You know, wouldn't be too many people that didn't have their own equipment.
You talked about horses before. Did your parents have animals?
Yeah, we had two draft horses. You know, originally, that's when we first came down, we had two draft horses. But then the tractors became in vogue, so then we got rid of draft horses.
Cow?
We had two cows. We had to get up in the morning and go and milk them. You know, two cows originally, and quite often they'd be tethered on River Road, which is Findon Road. They'd be tethered on the side of the road to keep the grass down.
And was the milk used productively in your
household?
Yeah,
the milk was used productively to make cheese and butter, and that's the only milk we used to drink. Yeah, it wasn't pasteurised, it was inurised.
So if we go back to the other side of Findon Road, to the western side, and we're down at the river.
Yes.
What can you tell me about the people there that you knew?
Well, the first one I remember is Ballantyne's. It's Ray Ballantyne, and he's about a little older than what I am. Then his sister Margaret. Then down from them there was a place called Dominato's. But at the back of Dominato's there was also another Chinaman, and I just cannot think of what his name was. But he used to live at the rear of Dominato's, and he had a few glasshouses.
And that looks like it could be those
ones
there.
Yeah, that's right. Because Dominato's, they didn't have any land at all. They just, they just lived in the house.
Right.
But there was a Chinaman at the back of their property, and they used to have glasshouses. And then you had the Kuhl, Mrs. Kuhl, and she had a very big homestead, covered in a lot of trees, and they had a big barn along the side of the homestead with a loft. I presume that was their stables and that, and where they used to have to store their hay and their fodder for their horses.
And when you say it was a big house, like a...
It was a massive house.
Two-storey?
I don't think it was two-storey. Well, I know the barn was. The barn was two-storey, but whether the house was two-storey, I can't really recall. I know it was a big house, and they had a big willow tree out the front. You could stand under it, and you wouldn't be seen. And
was that a family?
No. Well, I can only ever remember her being there on her own. Only as Miss Kill, they used to call her, and I can't really say that I remember any other person being there. But she was very friendly, you know, you'd go there, you'd walk past, and she'd always say hello. And
was she an older person?
Oh, she was much older, yeah. She would have probably been, I think when we came down here, I think she would have been, probably 70 years of age when I first moved here.
Like older than your parents?
Oh,
like
she would have been much older. Yeah, she would have been a generation older than Mum and Dad, yes.
So we're going north?
So we're going north. Then past Kuhl's place on the corner of Findon Road and Valletta Road, the Ballastrin, not Chisel Ballastrin, was there. And he was married to Maria Ballastrin. He came out, and 4 years later, his wife and son came out. And we became very, very close to them because they were our closest neighbours.
And what sort of occasions did the two families get together for?
Well, not very often, but we always used to talk to one another. But then again, they had their family, we had our family, and if there was a party going, they'd always be the first ones you would invite. And if they had the party going, you'd be the first ones they would invite. We were very friendly, but we never seemed to get into each other's homestead sort of thing. You know, but if you wanted something, you'd only have to ask them and they'd come and help, and not vice versa. If they wanted something, they'd come and ask Dad for help, and Dad would help them. But we became very, very close friends with them.
And were you and Jimmy the same age?
I'm about 9 months older than Jimmy, but he would be one of my best ever mates. He was the best man at my wedding. I was best man at his wedding. But we've known each other since 1946. Well, he was a year younger than what I was, or 9 months younger, and he came out here as a four-year-old from Italy. So he was born in Italy and came out here as a four-year-old. But we've been friends ever since, and we still are.
That's lovely. Mm. Should we go further
north,
along Findon?
Further north than we were down here. The land on the northern side of Grange Road, Valletta Road, sorry, heading towards Grange Road, land there was by Mr. Kuhl, and he had a son called David Kuhl. I know he had a daughter, and I can't quite remember her daughter's name. But David Kuhl was a very, very loyal person. I know when Dad passed away, he came to Dad's funeral, and I still remembered Kuhl's place. He had a vacant block next door, which had a model train, and the model train was on the southern side of the house. And we used to go down there and hop on his model train, and he'd ride us around this track on this vacant block.
How big was the train?
The train only have to be about, what, maybe 2 feet off the ground. And, on a train track, had its own train track, and he would chuff it around, and you'd be sitting on little chairs on the back.
And was he okay about kids coming?
He loved kids going over there. He loved the kids going over there on his train, and that was his passion. He loved his model train.
And did he have land that he grew stuff on?
No, he didn't. Pardon me. No, he didn't grow any stuff. The land he had, that was all leased out. He leased his land out, and that's where he got his income from. And he was the first house that I ever know that had a swimming pool.
And was the swimming pool as available to people as the train?
Yes, it was an Olympic-sized pool, of course, but no, quite often on a hot day we were allowed to go in there and have a dip in the pool.
Yes. That's interesting.
Yeah, no, we did quite often. No, and then, of course, the Kills and Dad, you know, we got on very, very well together. And on the corner of Valletta Road and Findon Road, that was mainly an almond orchard. There was all almonds in there originally when we first moved there in 1946. Mm.
And then
when... Then past Kills, and you go past Kills, I know there was a chap in there by the name of Sprisser. And he had what they called a bocce green. They used to play bocce there every weekend. Pardon me. And then past Sprisser's, there was an easement just past Sprisser's that used to take you further inland or further west. And we used to go into what they used to call the Tonelados and the Piovesons.
Oh, yeah. Can we stop and you get a glass of water?
I think I might have.